The following program has been brought to you by Cain Vineyard and Winery. Cain Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cain5.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah. That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. It's a very, very hot day in Brooklyn today. And I could think of no better way to spend it with, I believe this to date is the most people I've had in the studio at one time by one person. We have four great bar industry bartender people from Norway, from Oslo.
Skål.
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 I can't reach that far, brother. We have in the studio today Anders, Amari, Dan, we got Hella, and we are joined again by a repeat guest of ours, Brian Miller, of New York City fame. You guys are all on the show. You're all in town right now. You tend to visit the city a lot. I think it's pretty cool. Like, you come to town for, first of all, you guys get a lot of vacation time, which is something that's really, like, foreign to us here, but you tend to come to New York City to get like inspiration for what is your everyday growing bar scene. You tend to, like every time I see you, which is, again, a lot, which is great. It's great. There's constantly an evolution that you keep talking about in the Oslo bar scene. And can you tell us a little bit more about like the places you work at? Like, generally, you all work for kind of like the same core group of bars and bartenders. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
We all work at a place called Park Theater. Mm-hmm. It's located in a small part of Oslo called Grünerløkka. Mm-hmm. It's like more or less, it's a growing scene. Like 20 years back, it was workers' area.
It's a bit like Williamsburg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like kind of an industrial area of sorts, and then it was kind of like gentrified, turned into something like of a
hipster
destination
heaven
spot. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So a lot of bars throughout the last 10 years, a lot of bars have popped up in the area, like more or less on one street. We work at one of them. Amnish used to work at another one, and we all co-work with some of the other bars as well. We have like a small cocktail bar called Bar Boca. Almost next to it, it's a tiki place called Aku Aku, where I'm the chief's work. And now we're all gathered up at Park Theater. It's like a beer joint, whiskey, the cocktails as well.
That's great. I love that there's a bar in Oslo called Aku Aku. You got the whole Thor Heyerdahl kind of thing going on. And recently, I guess fairly recently, probably not as far as like as often as you guys take trips to travel around the country, you did have Brian Miller and Cabell Tomlinson and Thomas Waugh, all formerly of Death & Company, and other great bars around the city. You had them come out to do some guest bartending at a couple places, right?
Yeah, we're constantly trying to like evolve the cocktail scene in Oslo, because we have none. As in America, you have like 150 years of history doing cocktails, and Norway is like in its infancy, like
right
towards cocktails. So a couple of our friends went to New York two and a half years ago, and hung out a lot at Death & Co. and got to meet Brian and Thomas and also Cabell, and we just sent him a mail and thought, yeah, let's ask them over. And they could do some classes with us and teach us some stuff. And yeah, we've been frequently back to New York since.
I think that changed a lot of things as well when you guys came over. It was like a cocktail renaissance in Oslo. Really, it was. With all the techniques and the infusions that you guys taught us.
That was a pretty incredible time. When Thomas and Cabell and I went over, Ida had interviewed me, and at the end, she was like, hey, do you want to come over to Oslo? I was like, absolutely. Thomas got invited, and I brought my ex-girlfriend along, Cabell, with me. And I remember, like, we landed and immediately went to bars. You guys dragged us out to pretty much everything, I think, until 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, and then had a couple of hours of sleep. And the next thing you know, we got dragged, and we were supposed to do a lecture, which, of course, we were 45 minutes late for, because there was no alarm clock in anybody's apartment. And then when we showed up, I mean, God, we felt like the Rolling Stones. Like, there was, like, 70 bartenders in there. You couldn't see anybody through all this chain smoking that was going on in there. And Thomas,
like, the good old days.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. That it felt like every bartender in Oslo was in that place. And so Thomas and I were obviously incredibly nervous. But got up and talked with everybody, and it was one of those things where, you know, you do a lecture and you're like, hey, does anybody have any questions? And nobody said anything. And so we're kind of standing there twiddling our thumbs. And then at the end, everybody came up to us and had like a million questions. You guys were all asking us stuff until finally I got to go smoke a cigarette. I'm so tired of listening to myself talk. But it was amazing. You guys just...
Now you know how I feel.
Yeah. Jesus, I do. But it was an amazing experience. I mean, literally, you know, Thomas will probably kill me, but we were practically driven to tears by the time we left, because we really enjoyed being with all of you guys. It was such an amazing time, and certainly my last night in Oslo was definitely top five best moments I've ever had in my life. 17 bottles of Cava later.
Yeah, but...
And an umbrella.
And how were they... how again did you serve those 17 bottles of Cava, Brian?
Oh my God. Well, it started off, I don't know what propelled me. Perhaps it was the aquavit that we were drinking that night. But
And right now,
absolutely. Although I think I just had a shot of rye. That's very nice. No, it started, I don't know, for some reason, Ida, she left a pair of baby blue pumps. And I don't know what propelled me, but I started pouring Cava into the shoes. And then we started drinking out of shoes and singing Russian drinking songs, and then everybody was drinking out of each other's shoes, whether it was sneakers or boots or pumps or, you know, I mean, hella, you've got shoes, what, size of a munchkin? They're like, you know, size 2 or 3. So
the shot glass size.
Yeah, that did, yeah, her shoes were the shot glass size. But, oh God, we drank, and then we drank out of an umbrella that had a hole in the top of it, so like we were underneath that drinking Cava, and
I think we were singing at the time as well.
We were singing. Thomas definitely was singing with the umbrella at some point, and there was a lot of really weird homoerotic stuff. Anders was like in a vest, with leather vest, with no shirt underneath, and people started taking off their clothes, and made for a real interesting and quite aromatic plane ride home, that's for sure.
You had some wet shoes on the way back home.
Yeah, nothing like the, you know, scent of Cava and foot sweat to really make a hangover last just a little bit longer.
Yeah, I'm sure the TSA really appreciated you when you took your shoes off at the checkpoint to smell reeky bartender foot mixed with Spanish sparkling wine.
That smell didn't go well with my $20 sandwich.
Speaking of that, like, there's one thing that you were talking to me earlier about collectively, and before even the last couple of trips that I've seen you on, the amount of money that it takes to actually buy, like, even like what we take for granted, like Rittenhouse rye, and you know, like certain, like, that's what we use for our Manhattans. That's like basically, even though it's like the best rye for mixing, it's like, it doesn't cost, it's about like $20 a bottle here, and for you it's how much?
Well, I say you pay $120 for a bottle of Sazerac. Maybe Rittenhouse is $70.
Rittenhouse is slightly cheaper, but they took it off the market because it didn't sell enough. But hopefully we can get it back now. We've been talking to people and kind of asking them to just take it in again, because
working with the distributors, like you were telling me last time you were here. So, with that in mind, I'm wondering, like, how it must be extremely difficult to, like, keep a classic cocktail program going, even at something like the Aku Aku, keeping a tiki bar.
It's yeah, it's different. It's kind of difficult because if you were to use all the rums you use here, like Eldorado 15, for example, you would have to charge like $30 for a cocktail just to make it even. So
it's crazy. And like, we were on the train over here, and Hal was telling me about like the proof levels. Also, you can't get like you can't have like
not more than 120 proof. Yeah.
No,
it's considered drug.
It's considered a drug.
Narcotics.
Yeah. That's, well, I mean, it should be treated that way.
Yeah, it should. Okay.
I can't tell you how many times I've been over to Tiki Adams' house with Brian Miller and had to take a break and a glass of water. So with that, like, do you rely mostly on, I mean, obviously, like, any bartender worth their salt can actually make a good drink using what you have available. That's pretty standard. I mean, like, they're, you know, like David Wondridge, he's got his hotel room old fashioned where he takes like a mini bottle of whiskey from the like the mini bar, a sugar packet, a little bit of water, puts it in a glass, and then the only thing you're missing is the bitters, but every good bartender should always carry their own bitters with them anyway, right? Travel size. I mean, they're already kind of travel size anyway. Yeah. But so, like, what are some of the things you've done with cocktails?
Well, especially we've improved the ice because we didn't like think of doing great ice before. And actually, Thomas and Brian had a whole lecture on ice as part of the first introduction course they had. And last time we went to New York as well, we met at Milk and Honey with Sasha Petrosky. And he was like, whatever you can get hold of, just make good ice, and you'll make some good cocktails even. So, well, that's the first step. And now we're trying to work with the distributors to get more, like, varieties over. And
you're in Norway where it's cold. Sorry. Where it's cold all the time, so you should have good ice.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but it's all about working with what you've got and just improving what you've got.
Absolutely.
As long as you can focus on what you have instead of focusing on what you could have had.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm from like one of the smallest towns in Oklahoma, and
say the name.
I'm from Lone Wolf, Oklahoma. I'm proud to be from there. But it was such a small town that there was literally nothing to do. There was always a joke about like drinking, fighting, fucking. That's what you did. And that's what you do in a small town. But really, like, in that situation, you have to, like, make your own fun. You have to make what you can of your situation. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about. I mean, like, of course, Oslo is a lot different from Lone Wolf, Oklahoma. So you do have an advantage. I mean,
slightly better. Slightly bigger, at least, maybe.
I mean, I think what you guys do, like, my experience in Oslo was, like, coming from New York, going to Oslo, New York was literally like, we're all walking around with Zippos, and you guys are walking around trying to rub two sticks together. Like, it's really hard for you guys to create good cocktails because you just have limited, you have limited resources. But I think what you guys do there is amazing, and there isn't, you can't equate it to the passion you guys have. Like, I was totally blown away by, literally, I think after the first couple of nights of bartending there, Espen, like, already started doing tea infusions. And people just, there's such an incredible passion and an eagerness to learn in Oslo that it's inspirational, coming from New York, you know, because sometimes you can kind of get lost in the bitterness and the petty competitiveness that goes on in this industry. And there, it was like, it literally was one for all and all for one. It was like, you guys were, you were making great drinks. Actually, I think when I saw the at Park, you guys were doing a Jack Rose with Calvados, and I was like, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. But it was actually, you know, I was like, well, oh right, you guys don't have Laird's Bonded. But actually, it was kind of an inspiration for At Death and Company, because when we redid our Jack Rose there, we actually split it between Calvados and Laird's Bonded, and it was just, it was great. I mean,
there's also, I can't speak highly enough. you have been doing a lot of the work for us, because we can come to New York and we can have you over to Norway and get inspiration. We don't have to invent the wheel over again. We can just get the inspiration we need from you. So we have, I think we have an advantage in that situation, because everything is out there, so we can just get it from...
I think you guys, you know, you may be inspired by us through our cocktails, but honestly, I felt inspired by you guys, honestly, as human beings. Like, I thought you guys were, like, some of the nicest...
After the umbrella night.
most genuine human beings I've ever been around. Like, there wasn't any competitiveness of, you know, it's kind of like taking a test and not showing your answers to somebody. It was like, you guys were completely open. You were so supportive of one another, and certainly of Thomas Cavill and I, like... I don't know. I mean, everybody jokes around here. It's like, oh, you guys are rock stars. I'm like, no, you know, I've seen The Police play. I'm like, those guys are rock stars. We're just bartenders. But being in Oslo, you guys treated us literally like we were rock stars. And it was quite a humbling experience. I absolutely loved it. I would highly recommend Oslo to anybody.
Speaking of humbling experiences, we're going to take a break real quick, but we're going to play one of the songs that was dedicated to Thomas Wall while they were out in Oslo. This is Postman. This is a theme song to Postman Pat.
Postman Pat, Postman Pat, and his black and white cat. Early in the morning, just as day is dawning, he picks up all the post bags in his van. Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat, and his black and white cat. All the birds are singing, and the day is just beginning. Pat feels he's a really happy man. Everybody knows his bright red van. All his friends will smile as he waves to greet them. Maybe you can never be sure, there'll be knock, ring, letters through your door. Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat, and his black and white cat. All the birds are singing, and the day is just beginning. Pat feels he's a really happy man. Pat feels he's a really happy man. Pat feels he's a really happy man.
Yeah. All right. So
that was our studio audience.
That was awesome. When did they show up? That's great, man. It's not just Table 42, but it's...
I thought we were the studio.
if anyone wants to see the video of that, they should go to YouTube and watch it. If you know Thomas Waugh, you'll get quite a kick out of it. Sorry, Thomas. Sorry, buddy.
He's working. He didn't pay us.
So, okay, I actually want to talk about... We've been drinking Aquavit this entire show, and it's actually one of the spirits that has become more and more popular in the United States over the past few years. I would say, like, over the past 5 years, slow burn at first, but now it's you see it in a lot of cocktails. Things like this, Bolle Geneva, you know... Things like that that are a little bit maltier and a little bit like more, I don't know, like the botanicals are a little bit on the softer side, but they're a base spirit and they have a long history, and now we're using them in cocktails. But I don't know if anyone really knows, or a lot of people really know, like what Aquavit is. I mean, could you explain a little to us about that?
It depends on where it's made. In Norway, we always make it from potatoes, yeah. But you can make it from grain as well. The Swedes make it from grain, the Danish and the German make it from grain, and I think it's grain made in the US as well, but in Norway strictly potato.
That's
and then
cool.
you distill it, and depends on what country, but in Norway it's a lot of caraway
seed.
Yeah, right. That's more or less it. In Sweden you got it like every kind of flavor,
all different styles.
Yeah.
Want.
So, but, like, I mean, obviously, like, aquavit, like, is a very old term, and pretty much the origin of most distilled spirits can go back to be calling aquavit. I mean, like, grappa is an aquavit, you know.
It's alcohol.
Yeah.
It's flavored alcohol. Yeah. I mean, it's nothing more than distilled spirits.
Yeah, and like, I mean, like, even whiskey, the term whiskey comes from an old, like, water of life. I mean, really.
Whiskey-ba.
Yeah, yeah, whiskey-ba. The origin, though, was, like, from, like, water of life, and that's what a lot of spirits, and a lot, it's kind of weird and serendipitous that a lot of different cultures and different places around the world actually took that term, water of life, and applied it to their distilled spirits, you know? But specifically for Norway, you've got like a lot of caraway, and like you said, it's a potato based spirit, which I always liked. I like, as far as like vodkas go, if I'm ever going to drink a vodka, which I rarely do, it's potato. I like potato vodkas, but it's a really cool ingredient to mix with, like aquavit. And like I said,
yeah, some of them you can actually taste the potato off them. Some of them, like Linea, I know you get the Linea here.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it tastes a bit too much potato-ish.
It's very potato-y.
Yeah, I don't. That's not. I actually feel sorry.
Linea's different here.
No. Linea is it's a good aquavit, but I'm really sorry that you can't get any of the others because.
We have a huge variety of really good aquavits.
Like the one we're drinking now, the Gammel Oppland. It's amazing. It's really good. Just like drink it beer, drink it, like make cocktails with it, whatever. You can make punches. It's really good. And it's
well,
the
you
perfect
guys have a difference with the aquavit that we're drinking right now is in a port cask.
Yeah. But the regular Gammel Oppland, really good as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Love that stuff. And then you guys also have, there's like a Christmas aquavit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
A winter aquavit.
They're hard, like, a little heartier.
I mean, I think it's amazing. It's definitely an
Does under... Santa Claus deliver it?
I've always wanted to have, actually, the Christmas aquavit, but I never actually have, and, you know, I'm sure it's probably really good with the rotten fish that is quite the delicacy.
Gotta love the rotten fish, man.
No, actually, I don't, but that's okay. But I think it is an underused spirit, just like Damon, you were saying, and honestly, to me, one of my new favorite cocktails is at Von Dog. Katie Stipe's version of the Turf cocktail with aquavit just totally blows my mind. Like,
it's amazing. I had it.
It's the Turf War. Yeah, it's the Turf cocktail.
I had it the last time I was here. It's amazing. And the thing is that in the U.S., in Norway, we more or less drink our aquavit like pure.
Well, I think aquavit is underrated in Norway as well because we usually drink it as a shot, like neat with a fatty Christmas food.
And it's usually older person's drink, right? Like, not a lot of the young people actually drink aquavit.
No, actually, just now people are starting to get their eyes open for cocktail making. So, especially now with the Linea, the Linea Awards going on in Oslo. Actually, Thomas Vaa is judging the Linea Awards.
How the hell did he get that?
I don't know. I think it's Jesper. It's Defenko, yeah.
Yeah.
But things are changing with aquavit in Norway as well. It's starting to use them in drinks as well and cocktails.
I mean, it's such an amazing spirit. It's like, you know, you can talk about like gin is vodka without the training wheels, and I kind of feel like aquavit is gin without the training wheels. Like, there's so much going on in that spirit, and there's so much to work with aquavit. I just
and hopefully people can actually see that now because. Took me. I did not know that. Sorry.
Microphone.
I didn't know before I came here. I knew that you could use aquavit for a lot of cocktails, but when I came to Van Dag and met Katie Stipe, it's like, hell yeah!
Oh my god, the infusions that she's doing.
It's
amazing.
Like the little tasting board. We had one of each. I didn't even know
strawberry,
that you could do
pepper,
that.
Pineapple.
carrot and lemongrass.
But at the same time, we took that home and
God bless her.
Have been talking about it. People have been more experimental with the rocko beat, and especially a lot of the bars. And now the distiller has actually, it opened the distiller's eyes. So in Norway, it's stately run the distillery.
It's kind of weird, actually. It's like, yeah. I mean, as a tiki fan, I'm like, you know what? There's no, well, outside of Smuggler's Cove and Tiki Tea and the Mai Kai down in Florida, it's like, there's no really good tiki bars here in the United States. But over in Europe, everything is great. Turn around, and it's like, with Aquavit, everybody here in the United States is like doing cool stuff with Aquavit. And it's like, you guys are drinking it straight. I'm like, really? Like, that's
it's good straight as well, but
it is good straight, but like it's
mixing spirit.
It yeah, absolutely. It gives it that extra oomph, that kick, you know. It's like you create a cocktail and you're like, okay, it's missing that kick. What is it? And it's like
Aquavit.
I mean,
I use it in my Bloody Marys.
It's really good in Bloody Marys.
Fucking brilliant, by the way.
And like, technically it's called a Danish Mary when you use aquavit, or like, I guess I've heard a billion different things, but I just call it my Bloody Mary because in my never ending crusade to not use vodka in any cocktail
on my menu. By the way, there's a case of Linier at Death and Company for you.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm going to use it. And one cool thing about that bottle, too, is like, I'm not trying to like plug this without anyone being here, like working for that company, but one cool thing is, like, when you flip over the bottle, you look at the inside of the label, you get to see, like, it's printed on the inside of the label, the ship that it would actually cross the equator on.
Speaking of Aquavit, you should have some more of this.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Anders. But, yeah, it was House Spirits from Portland doing the Krogstad.
Krogstad Aquavit.
I think we have a lot to owe. Like, especially that brand, like,
cheers
with the over the cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Oh, that was the last drop, actually.
Nice, good to the last drop. But we do have to, in the United States, we do have to like pay some props to the small distillers, like the boutique distilleries, you know, or
Christian Krogstad,
for actually like stepping out of the box and, you know, making ingredients, they're making spirits like this, because with the same mentality that we approach a lot of cocktails nowadays, we are always looking for the newest and better and more esoteric ingredients to use to make, you know, we can't like recreate the Manhattan for like another like 200 years. We got to start doing our own stuff. And to have like him do an aquavit like that, but and like to bring that to the market.
Maybe somebody should make a Manhattan aquavit.
What's that?
Maybe somebody should make a Manhattan with aquavit.
Maybe you should do it. Maybe these guys should do
maybe
it.
Maybe Katie should do it.
Call it the Oslo.
better.
Anyway, but I think it's really like it's a really exciting time all around in this world of like cocktails and bartending and bars and spreading the gospel around the globe. So we've got four bartenders from Norway coming in to New York City to hang out and give us some insight to what's going on the other side of the world. And I think, you know, we should have been at this point like a little while ago. We should have been doing this in the 70s, but you always have to have a dark period before you can come back up to the light.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree with you. I mean, I think these guys from Oslo, Anders, Double Anders.
Yeah, Double Anders.
Double Anders, Ida, Dan, Hella, all the kids in Oslo, like, I think it's the most amazing thing about them is their passion. And they're like sponges. They just soak up everything around them. And it's kind of the epitome of cocktails. This is not supposed to be an exclusive group. This is good cocktails should be for everybody. Everybody should have them. And your guys' passion is incredibly inspiring. How the fuck am I talking? You guys should be talking.
You're working on like a drinking culture festival in Oslo?
Yes, actually.
Okay. Yeah, that's a
part of like the Renaissance as well, after being here a couple of times and seeing how the scene evolves in Oslo now after these trips and you guys over at us, we thought like we should try to make a how should I put it, Hella?
Your
like
tales.
Well, it's not a festival. It's like just to get enlightened.
Raising knowledge amongst everybody working and everybody interested, from guest to supplier.
I think that's what Tales was supposed to be.
Well, this is a non-profit thing, and it's just to raise awareness in the industry, how to become a better bartender and a better guest, and also to cooperate with all the levels of, like, from the supplier to the guy actually standing and shaking those cocktails, and the guest drinking it, and how to behave, because... Well, we have
Norway's different.
Yeah, Norway's different.
Yeah.
No.
No, but it's all about just like, as long as we can raise awareness and knowledge about alcohol and whatever we can get, and if we work with the suppliers on this, it will be easier for us to get what we actually want into the country, and it will be easier to make the guests actually demand quality, because that's the problem now. They don't know what they want. Some of them do, but
there's still vodka batteries like all over.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah. As long as we can make the guests demand something good and demand quality, we have to step up.
Well, I demand that you have me over sometime to Oslo to guest bartend and hang out. It's been my pleasure having you all on my show. And I also want to say, this is our 20th show.
Congratulations.
And it's great that we had so many guests on at one time. It's great. What's that?
20 more.
What, to one more?
20 more. 20
more. Guys, thank you so much. Dan, hello. Maury, honors, and Brian Miller. Thanks to my producer, Jack Inslee. Guys, next time you're here, which is probably going to be in like 2 weeks, knowing you guys, please come back and hang with us on the Speakeasy.
Definitely.
I'm your host, Damon Volte. Cheers. Man, I wouldn't lie to get higher than a kite. Now when you see him stumbling up and down the street, you know that cat's been drinking. Got no shoes upon his feet. Man,
thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. A beef cut has been designed for a beer pairing. I know you're all going to be really happy to hear that. The Samuel Adams Boston Lager Cut will be available nationwide through an online retailer. This was actually designed by Jake Dixon of New York City's Dixon's Farm Stand Meats, located in the Chelsea Market, and it's cut from the cap to the top sirloin at a 45-degree angle. It's a nice-looking little steak. It's an 8-ounce steak that is designed to complement Sam Adams Boston Lager. But I bet you could find other beers that it would pair well with as well. So look out for it. Let's see what it's like. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Check out a small clip from The Food Scene, hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel, a show where food and art intersect.
I think most recently you had a chocolate waterfall that had 5 tons of chocolate flowing, and you'd put on, what, a protective suit, walk through a waterfall, yeah, make your own chocolates within this kind of contained environment. And most recently, a rabbit cafe.
Yep.
Can you explain that one to me a little bit?
Well, I'm... And this also slightly comes from jellies as well, because in England, everyone has these rabbit jelly molds. It's the most popular mold. Everyone goes, oh, I had rabbit jellies as a kid. And we've always been utterly bewildered by it. Why rabbit jellies? The only way to get to the bottom of it was to get a whole herd of rabbits, open a cafe with them, and have people touch rabbits and eat.
Yeah.
So it kind of has resonance with one of our favorite cookbooks, which we think an awful lot of modern chefs have is their dark secret under their pillow, which is the Futurist.
Want to hear more? Well, tune into The Food Scene live every week, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Or you can find all the archive shows on our website or subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Thanks for listening.